Welcome back to the Terminal Exchange, the official podcast of Nussbaum Transportation, where we explore key issues and compelling stories in the trucking industry. I'm your host, Dayton Rumbold, and you're listening to episode 110, Across Three Continents with Mornay Van Rensburg. Mornay's story is anything but normal. How did he go from South Africa to England to working at Nussbaum? We also talk about faith and how it grounds us, and stay tuned in to the end to hear a special sneak peek of our latest trailer message. You're not gonna wanna miss this featured exchange. Welcome back to the Terminal Exchange, episode 110. We got Mornay in the house. Welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, excited to have you here.
Yeah.
If you've ever had a technology issue or had any problem, you've probably had Mornay fix it. Mornay is the person in the IT help desk, mm-hmm. and you've helped a lot of people out here at Nussbaum.
Yeah. So, yeah, like I say, working the IT department there, and been here for 2 years now.
2 years?
Yeah.
Okay. Mornay started a little bit after I joined. I came, and you were doing a tour around Nussbaum, and I got to meet you then, and right away I knew that by your accent that you're not from here.
Yeah.
And so that's a telltale thing. It's really cool. I think it's great. So you have a great podcast voice, so
I'll take that.
Yeah, and you've done a podcast before, so
yeah, this is, yeah, like couple of previous occasions. So okay,
cool. Yeah, well thanks for being here again.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah. To start out, I would like to play a game. I did this last time and it was fun as a way to drop little pieces of the episode that we're about to talk about today. So today we're going to talk about Mornay's life, how he got here, and how he found hope in difficult times. And we'll start by that with the two truths and a lie. So
yeah,
if you're ready, what do you got for your two truths and a lie?
Yeah, so I made notes here, so I actually wrote them down. I normally, when I play this game, I always like try and think of them ahead of time, and then I forget like one of them, and I'm like, ugh. I have to think on the spot, so I just wrote them down. So, first one is, I have been to 18 out of 50 states.
Okay.
Second one is, I have never eaten biscuits and gravy.
Okay.
And the final one is, I've broken my ankle 3 times.
Hmm. Okay. Okay, so we got 18 out of 50 states,
mm-hmm.
you never ate biscuits and gravy, and you broke your ankle 3 times. Okay, this is the 18 out of 50, I feel like could be a possible lie, because it's easy to tweak that number. It could be 17, sure. Could be 16, but you've been to a lot of states, or it's going to be 19. I'll say you probably never have ate biscuits and gravy, or that one's a fun one, so we'll keep that. And they broke the ankle 3 times, that could also be tweaked. So right now, my gut is telling me 18 out of 50 states, but Daniel, do you got any feedback? What do you think the lie is?
I think it's the biscuits and gravy one.
The biscuits and gravy? Oh, man. I'm torn. It could be the ankle. I'm going to go with my first shot, 18 out of 50 states.
That's actually a truth.
Oh, I'm pretty bad at this.
What's your record on like getting this right?
I missed both times with Matt. So, this next one, I'll use Daniel. You have never ate biscuits and gravy.
I actually have never eaten biscuits and gravy.
Okay, truth.
Yeah, that's the truth.
Okay, so you have broke your ankle 4 times.
Nope, I've actually never broken a bone.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I picked that one, like, I feel like whenever you play this game, like, the best lies are always, like, kind of half-truths that are definitely tweaked. So, I've never actually broken my bone, but I did tear 3 ligaments.
Wow.
In my ankle.
Ouch. So,
yeah.
How'd you do that?
We were playing a game called King of the Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it was, like, a step, like, fairway off the off the ground, and somebody pulled me off, and I fell with all my weight on top of my ankle, and immediately it was just like swollen pretty much right away. And couldn't walk for about 2 or 3 weeks. It was, yeah, not a fun situation at all.
Yeah. Wow. That's not fun to deal with that. Yeah. Thanks for playing a little bit of game. Get to know you.
Yeah.
So, Mornay, to be honest, Bloomington Normal isn't the most fun place.
Yeah.
So, looking at it, how did you end up in Bloomington Normal out of all places in the world?
Yeah.
I feel like that's something that first comes to my mind. And you can correct me, you've lived in three continents?
Yes. So, I was born in South Africa. My parents and grandparents and great-grandparents are all originally from there. And so I was born there. I lived there for 12 years. And then at age 12, we moved to England. And I lived in a really, really small town in the southwest of England. And I lived there for 14 years. Hence the weird mishmash of accent, of course. And then I actually met my wife in 2014. We became friends. And she's originally from Hudson, Illinois. Most of her family is actually from St. Louis, but she was born here in Bloomington. She lived and grew up in Bloomington Normal.
I think I've heard of Hudson.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you think so?
I think I've heard of it. It sounds familiar. Yeah.
So yeah, she's basically lived here her whole life, and once we got married, we actually lived in England for the first year of our marriage.
Okay.
And we came to the States for her sister's wedding.
Okay.
And it was literally just meant to be a visit, and opportunities opened up. God opened some doors for us, and
yeah,
we ended up having an opportunity to stay and made that decision to stay. We always wanted to live here initially.
Okay.
And unfortunately, when we were still engaged, about to be married, I applied for a visa to move to the States, and that got denied. So it really honestly flipped our world upside down, because we basically had everything planned to be here. And so when they got denied, it was kind of like, okay, what do we do now? Where are we going to live? Because then we had to apply for a visa for my wife to go to the UK, of course. So that's a little bit away from the question, of course, but yeah, ended up here because my wife's originally from here. So
yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things. I want to jump back and ask, how did you meet your wife? You met her in 2014.
Yeah.
What did that look like?
So we both actually did a discipleship school in Kenosha, Wisconsin. And so we were both on the same year. There was two different schools. One was called the School of Worship. And it was like basically dealing with specifically for musicians. So they do obviously music classes, they do music theory, and then there's the discipleship aspect of that. And then they had a second school at the time called the School of Leadership, and it was like helping raise up church leaders and so on. And she was on that particular course. And so yeah, we had a mixture of classes together, and it was more that we knew about each other. We knew like, oh, that's Millie and that's Mornay, but we never really interacted much. And then afterwards, she actually got employed by that group of churches in a leadership position. And the group of churches that we were a part of at the time, they have churches in Germany, here obviously in the States, they have some in England. So they have I think about 9 or 10 plants out now. And so yeah, she just went to all the different congregations all over the world. And when she came to England, that's when we became actually really good friends.
Okay.
And so that was in 2015, 2016, when we actually became better friends.
Okay. So you went to the school together, and then she was traveling for work.
Yes.
And then came to England when you were there.
Yeah.
Okay. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And what attracted you to her? What was the thing? It's obviously you are attracted to her, but like what made her different than other people to you?
That's a great question. I mean, just honestly, first and foremost is just her passion for the Lord. Like she loves the Lord dearly. I think the fact that she is completely sold out is mm-hmm. the thing that stands out the most. And, you know, as you obviously get to know people more and more, and you continue to build that relationship, it's not just like, oh, I'm attracted to her because of this. Like, mm-hmm. it just continues to develop. That was the main initial thing. My wife's a redhead. Like, I love that.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, the fact that she's just not just passionate about loving the Lord. She's a really, really strong person, which is, I absolutely love that about her.
Yeah.
And then as our relationship has just developed, she's a great mom. She's mm-hmm. a great wife. And
yeah,
she's just my best friend, aww. Honestly. So
that's really sweet.
Yeah.
You have two kids?
Two kids. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. My daughter is, she's 3.
Mm-hmm.
And my son is about 15, 16 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So. Yeah, the verse says, charm is deceitful, beauty is vain, but a woman that fears the Lord is worthy to be praised.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's great. Glad to hear that. Yeah, it's cool. So, yeah, sounds like she had a great, that leadership position in mm. ministry. Looking back at South Africa,
mm.
why did you move from South Africa to England?
I think it was really just purely a practical thing. So, my dad had his own business. In South Africa, my dad is a dental technician. And so he started a business right when he graduated from college.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guys that was at college with him, they started the business together. And about 3 years in, his business partner moved to England.
Mm-hmm.
So they parted ways. We obviously stayed in South Africa. And I think one of the biggest factors, even though we were never really affected by it at the time, but over, I would say, like a very long time now, actually, like the crime rates especially has been going up and, mm-hmm. and life there has just been getting increasingly difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time we were living there, like I said, it's not like we were affected by it. Like, it's not like we were ever struck by crime or right. anything like that. But I think my dad was looking more to the future in the sense of like, okay, what's going to be the best potential future for my brother and I, and not just for us, but for them, my parents as well. And so I think the first time my dad's old business partner reached out to him was in 2003. Mm-hmm. He said like, okay, listen, we have a ton of work here. Would you consider moving to England and we'll basically start up another business together?
Mm-hmm.
And my dad went out to England and scouted it out and initially decided, okay, we're going to stay mm. in South Africa. And then 3 years went by in 2005 or 2006. Same call happened and dad went out again and scouted it out. He's like, all right, let's move.
Yeah.
And so the predominant drive was actually just to provide a better future for us as a family. And so that was the means of how it happened, is an old business partner that contacted him.
Yeah, that's a compelling reason mm-hmm. for the safety of your family.
Yeah.
How old were you when you moved?
I was 12.
You were 12?
Yeah.
Wow.
So really young. I would say the fact that I was so young actually made it much easier because, you know, I've not really had any of my formative years
mm-hmm.
taken place in South Africa. I think for my brother it was definitely harder. He's 4 years older than I am, so he was obviously a teenager, already had some of his formative years behind him.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the adjustment from moving to England from South Africa was much more difficult for the rest of my family, whereas for me it was kind of like a pretty easy and quick transition.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. So yeah, it was a time where you could transition easily. Was that something that was, it wasn't very difficult for you at all? Just transition was pretty easy?
Yeah. No, on the whole, I would say it was pretty easy. I think for me, I always viewed it as like, oh, it's a new adventure. Like, you get to see a new country, get to explore a new place, yeah. meet new people, make new friends. Like, I was always pretty outgoing as a kid.
Mm.
Like, I always enjoyed meeting new people. So yeah. the idea of not just meeting new people, but now people
whole from new place.
Yeah, it's a whole new place. It's a whole new culture.
Yeah.
I really like that idea.
Very different. I mean, yeah. Can you talk about some of those differences between South Africa and England?
Yeah, I think South Africa as a culture, and now keep in mind, like I said, I was 12, so I was really young, and I've been back once, and it's been about a decade now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think my memory of South Africa specifically is a little bit more foggy, but I think generally speaking, South African people are super, super polite. Like, that's a really big part of how the culture is there. Like, you have to be polite. Like, religion is a huge part of it. And I think that was probably the biggest culture shock initially, was that a lot more people are openly not religious in England. Now, I actually, in preparation for this, I actually did a little bit of research just like on things of South Africa, like religion wise.
Right.
So about, I would say 70-ish% of people identify as Christian.
Okay.
And then there's like more minor religions like Muslim or Hindu.
Yeah.
And they're like about 1%. And then there's about 25% of people that actually identify as non-religious.
Okay.
Whereas in England, it's like, I actually don't know what that statistic would be, but I remember when we moved there initially, because we went to like church on Sundays. We actually grew up with a religious background.
Right.
And that was just really my norm, you know? Mm-hmm. So when we moved to England, the first person told me like, oh, I don't believe in God. I was like,
what?
This is, how can you not believe in God? That was a bit of an adjustment. And I think people were much more rough around the edges. I think that's a huge part of British culture is they're very stoic, but then when they say something, it just has that really sharp kind of cutting edge at times.
Right.
Like people, just tend to be a little bit more rough around the edges in that sense. I think another thing that was really shocking is kids my age were like really disrespectful to their parents.
Really?
Like very much so. And so that was 9-day difference in the culture. So that, it wasn't so much hard in the sense of like, oh, I didn't like this. Of course, I didn't agree with it, but it was more of a, this is just really different type of culture shock.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's good things you learned about England too, but those would be the most shocking, probably, things to happen. Was it hard to practice your faith in England?
Yeah, much more so. Like, I think there's, again, like people, like, especially with the whole fact of people are just much more harsh. I remember being at some sort of event and saying to somebody like, oh yeah, I grew up in a religious family and we believe in God. And this lady, or this girl actually, she was my age, younger than I am. She's like, oh, you're a freak. Like literally just like stuff like that. It's just like,
whoa. Yeah.
So yeah, I think outworking your religion can be much more difficult. And so when somebody says that they're a Christian, it's much more likely to be authentic Christianity as opposed to just somebody saying like, oh, well, I think with specifically dealing with Christianity, I suppose now, not just necessarily all religions,
right.
but I think we can sometimes get into this mindset of like, oh, I was born in the States or I was born in South Africa, so I'm a Christian because we were a Christian country. Whereas I think in England, there is some of that, of course, but it's less likely for people to say that they would actually, if they said they're Christian, they're much more likely to be authentic in their faith.
And is it more they're agnostic or atheist, just like don't believe in there is a God, or?
It depends on which part of England. Mm-hmm. So London, for example, like they have a huge population of like immigrants. So like, for example, Muslims, they're much more dense in London, for example. But I would say for majority of the people, it's actually much more either agnostic or atheist. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So. Very interesting. I would love to hear a little bit of the stories that you've encountered while traveling, like while experiencing these different countries, different continents. When you were there, like, I'm sure there was an initial feeling of being in England and you're like, this is brand new. You're 13 years old, exploring the country. And then later in life, and it sounds like you also traveled a lot too, like in that college time frame. Can you share some of those stories? Do you have any of those in mind that come to mind?
Yeah. I'm trying to think here. I think initially, like you say, it was just initially that adjustment period. And even though we came from that religious background, I would actually not say I was really a Christian at that time when we initially moved to England. For me, a lot of the stories that I think of once my traveling started mm-hmm. a bit more was actually after. I would say I actually authentically became a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really fun because, like, I think I remember my friends and I would, we started this entire worship night in mm-hmm. our town.
Yeah.
And we had people from all over different countries. Like, we had people from...
So, you started a worship night, just your friends and I, mm-hmm. you were like, hey, we're just going to do this?
Yeah. Just like, I remember we actually... This is, I suppose, much less actually dealing with the question because it's not so much talking right. with travel.
Yeah.
We started a worship night. Like, there was four of us that we hung out in a coffee shop. We said, hey, let's just get together this night. Let's just have a worship night. It was great. We said, like, two nights later, like, hey, let's do that again. Did it again and just, like, started picking up speed where we started meeting every single night.
Mm-hmm.
And word got around, mm-hmm. Like, town, like, to different churches. Like, oh, like, yeah, this is, like, really picking up speed. So within, like, I think a month, we had, like, 20 or 30 people coming. And then it started, like, other people who would come to England, like, so from different cultures and things. So mm-hmm. we had people from Switzerland and Germany and
no way
other people come as well. So that was always really fun. I've traveled to Germany and that was really interesting to go and see churches there as well.
Yeah.
That's
awesome.
Yeah. And then of course I've been to the States before I actually lived here. I was here a few times as well.
Okay. Where at? In Kenosha or?
I was in Kenosha. I traveled a fair amount around the States. Okay. So yeah, I've been to like New York, Kenosha, I've been out to the West Coast, well, not quite the coast, but out west as well.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, your culture blows me out of the water. it just in comparison,
mm-hmm.
it's interesting seeing all those people, Switzerland, neighboring countries come mm-hmm. together worshiping. I am a little curious, mm-hmm. how did your faith come to happen? How did you become a Christian?
That's a great question.
I'm sure it's a big
yeah.
story.
Yeah.
But, no. You know, like a elevator pitch of yeah. how you became a Christian.
I think for me, again, having grown up in a Christian home, I always thought I was a Christian, but really didn't live that out. Like, I knew all the right things to say. I knew, like, oh, this is what Christianity on the surface is really all about. Didn't live it out. Didn't really have any interest in living it out. And then at age 16, like, I think my predominant issue that I always had was, like, it was really important for me to have friends. Like, so much so that it actually became, to a degree, I would say, an idol even.
Mm.
And so at age 16, I actually went through this thing where, so in England, what's a little bit different to England from a schooling system perspective is where you guys have high school up until age 18, and then you go to college.
Mm-hmm.
In England, you go to high school up until age 16.
Okay.
And then you go to what England calls college, but it's like essentially your last 2 years of high school.
Hmm. Senior high school.
Yeah, essentially it's like senior okay. high school. So, yeah. But then because you leave your secondary school or your high school at age 16, everyone starts going to different schools at 16 to 18. So at like 15, like I had really good friends, and at 16 when we all started going to different schools,
yeah.
like that's when a lot of my friendships started breaking down. So for me, the most important thing, the idol in my life, started breaking down. So I was right. like, oh, okay, I have like nothing left. And I mean, I'm 16, like I'm not necessarily thinking clearly. It's not really a realistic thought, but
sure.
I think that's really for me the thing that brought me to a place of actually exploring in my heart, like, why is it that that is so important to me, and why is that actually my idol?
Mm.
And so actually just walking through that with the Lord, that's when I actually decided, you know what, I can't just profess that I'm a Christian, even if I don't believe everything. Like, I'm either a Christian or I'm not a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the time where, walking through that, I made the decision, like, you know what, I don't have all the answers, and I still have to work through some things, but I actually do believe mm. this, and so I have to change how I outwork this.
Mm.
So,
yeah, it's cool how a moment like that is what drove you mm-hmm. to becoming a Christian. They say an idol is anything that makes you angry or makes a strong emotion. Like when you lose it or something happens to it, it creates a really strong emotion in you. Mm-hmm. And you probably were like, you know, you felt really strongly about your friends. And that's a great thing to have.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like that good thing became like the ultimate thing.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, yeah, that's exactly it. It's like, if it becomes the ultimate thing, that's where it's the problem, right? It's mm-hmm. like the place that's only reserved or meant to be reserved for the Lord, right?
So, mm-hmm. yeah. Cool. And you grew up in a Christian home, it sounds mm-hmm. like. So that was something that you had those teachings, but it wasn't until later when you connected that with your heart.
Yeah, exactly. And so, again, it was easy for me to go to Sunday mornings with my parents and like walk, not so much walk the walk, but actually just like say the right things.
Mm-hmm.
I was definitely not walking the walk.
Yeah,
but I knew the right things to say, and I knew what Christians were meant to be.
Mm.
And so I was very much living from a hypocritical standpoint of professing Christianity and mm-hmm. not actually living it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. So then that was during your senior year. And then this was all in England,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Okay. And then you mentioned this a little bit earlier. Well, before we do that, I would also like to talk a little bit about the food. What's the food like in England, in South Africa? I think that culture aspect, just to give us a complete picture of where you're at for someone that's uncultured like me. Tell me more about that.
I think, so South Africa, it's a little more like rich and heavy food. Like we have lots of different things. Like there's this thing called, I personally never liked it, and I don't even know how to really properly pronounce it in English. It's like pronounced something like Baboti or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like this meat dish with like rice and lentils and mm-hmm. and this egg mixture. I personally never loved it. They love grilling out, so a lot of meat, steak, pork, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of stuff. They have something called Cook Sisters,
mm-hmm.
which is... I don't actually know exactly what it's like, some sort of dough that you deep fry and then you make this sauce concoction thing that you put in the freezer, but you don't freeze it. It's just to get really cold. And then so right after you deep fry it,
mm-hmm.
you dip it in this ice cold syrup. It's more of a syrup type of thing.
Yeah.
And it sucks it all up. So that's something that's really good. It's like a dessert.
Huh.
There's this thing called Fett Cook.
Mm-hmm.
Which is essentially that you take bread dough and you deep fry that as well.
Okay.
We love another thing called boerewors, which mm-hmm. is farmer's sausage.
Hmm.
And it's like just specific spices like cilantro seeds and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they love their meat. They love grilling out. That's a huge part for South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
England, their food is much more bland. their food's not good, I have to admit.
Really? That's a bold claim.
It's a bold... There's things I miss, don't get me wrong. There's things that they really, really do good. Mm-hmm. Like, I think things like... there's this thing called cream tea, which is more of a thing in the part of England that I was from, in the southwest, where they essentially take cream and they, like, boil it to a really, really specific temperature.
Okay.
And it actually causes the creams to separate another time. So there's like another level of essentially fat.
Yeah.
And they take that and they cool it down really, really quick. And it like forms this really thick, but almost like a sweet cream.
Like a foam?
It's not quite a foam. It's literally like cream. It's like super stringy. It's super thick.
Hmm.
But it's got this natural sweetness to it. And you eat it with... scones, so
okay,
that's a really good thing.
Sign me up.
It's one of the best things from England, I would say.
Okay.
They do really good fish and chips as well. Okay. Like you go to this hole in the wall type of place that you look at and you're like, I probably shouldn't eat there because I might get food poisoning, but then you go there and it's like actually the best fish and chips
in
the
world.
So
other
than that, I'm sure Jared Knight could probably confirm this, is that their food is pretty bland.
Yeah.
So
he's been there. Did he live there?
Yeah, I think he lived there for something like 3 years. I want to say, I think it's 3 years.
Cool. Yeah. So. Yeah. Jared's in operations for people listening. Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Cool. So. Yeah, I was curious on that, hearing a little bit about that culture. Did you have anything else you wanted to share about the culture or history of those places in your notes? Or
Nothing specifically in my notes. I think it's a little bit more difficult for me with South Africa because it's just been so long since I've actually lived there to remember everything clearly. Mm-hmm. So,
okay. Yeah. Great. Well, thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
Did you ever imagine yourself in IT?
No, actually. I for the longest time, I wanted to go into something like the police force.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always like this mixture between either the police force or going to the military.
Mm-hmm.
And I never lived in a country for long enough where I was able to do that. Because for both those things, you have to be a citizen of that country,
mm-hmm.
or you have to be 18. So South Africa, I wasn't 18. And with England, I actually became a citizen right before I moved here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was, I was never able to do either of those things. But specifically with the police force, I wanted to go into forensic science. I always found that super, super fascinating.
Hmm.
And so when my wife and I got married, I was actually working in healthcare at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do shift work. I don't want to do night shifts.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, oh, you should consider IT. Like, you're really good at it. I was like, when have you ever seen me do any IT work? How do you know that?
You restarted the Wi-Fi router one too many times.
Yes. I think she was thinking back to one occasion back in, like, when we were still friends. Like, she was having some computer issue. And she had a bunch of her friends try, and nobody could do it. And then I spent, like, 30 minutes, and I did it. And so she had that one scenario in her mind. She's like, oh, you're really good with IT. So she suggested it like several times. And then eventually I was like, all right, well, maybe I'll consider it. So I did an online certification, mm-hmm. ended up really liking it. And that's kind of where the conversation ended. And I just kind of went for it. So.
Okay, cool. And then your first job here in the U.S. was at, for the town of Normal? City of Bloomington,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, so I worked a contract position for them. Worked for a company called STL.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so they contracted me out to the city, and it was a six-month contract for them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And that's before you went to here. Was the next stop.
Yeah, yeah. It was towards the end of my contract there, mm-hmm. Approaching the 6 month window. I was like, okay, do you guys have a permanent position? Because it was kind of labeled as a contract to hire position.
Oh.
And so I asked them, like, okay, is this going to turn into a permanent thing? I really enjoy working here. And they're like, we don't have any positions open, but you can obviously potentially renew your contract.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is that it doesn't come with benefits or anything like that.
Sure.
And so I was like, okay, I'll just see what else is out there, you know? And I actually drove past Newsbomb every morning on the highway.
Oh, really?
And so I always drove past and I was like, oh yeah, that's a really cool building. I really like that, I like what they did. And so towards the end of the contract, I started looking around and happened to come across a help desk position.
Hmm.
I think it was on LinkedIn or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh yeah, they always look like a really cool company. I looked a little bit, I was like, oh, they're a Christian company. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So I sent in my resume to Rick via LinkedIn. Didn't hear back. And at least in England, what's kind of the norm is like, oh, if you don't hear back, it means that they're not interested.
Sure.
So I was like, oh, they're probably not interested, or they filled the position. It's not a big deal. I'll keep looking.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife being my wife, she's super tenacious with these kinds of things. She's like, just give them a call. You know, you don't know what they're going to say. Just give them a call.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, honey, if they were interested, like, they would have called me. They would have.
Yeah.
Said something, right? And she just kept going for it, like, just give him a call. And eventually, like, okay, fine, I'll give him a call. So I called in, Heather answered, explained the situation. I was like, hey, I applied and I haven't heard anything back. I was just following up. And she's like, oh, I'll just pass you through to Rick. And so I obviously got through to Rick. And he's like, oh, I'm actually really glad you called. I got your resume, but our cybersecurity guy, Seth, said we're not allowed to open resumes from LinkedIn.
What?
I guess it's some security risk or something.
Yeah.
And he's like, can you send it to me some other way? So I sent it to him. I think he called me back a day later and he's like, oh yeah, we want you to come in for an interview. So I think that this was like at a point where right when a snowstorm hit, so I couldn't actually come in. So I did an interview with Jesse and Doug over Zoom or Teams or something.
Yeah.
And so this was 2 days after I called Rick. I had the interview. And then I think they called me a day or two later and they're like, yeah, we want to offer you the position. So, yeah, like I definitely have to give credit to my wife for pushing me on that.
Yeah.
In terms of ending up here.
That's cool. It seems like it worked out. You have a real knack for IT and helping people. Mm-hmm. I think you've really impacted and made a positive impact to the people here. And I think it wouldn't be the same without you, you know, having you in the help desk and your roles maybe changed a little bit since you first got here. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, it's still definitely help desk. I think it's just more as I've honed in on some skills and developed a little bit more as, you know, just on my technical ability. Mm-hmm. I've just taken on a bit more responsibility, I would say. Mm-hmm. But it's all still within the help desk sphere.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I knew you were doing a little bit more with the database.
I was at one point. I think that's really where my skill set plummeted pretty quickly.
I
tried it for a while and
ended
up going to Jesse and Matt. I was like, look, I appreciate the vote of confidence, but I don't think I would do a good job at this.
Right.
So
cool.
Now I'm doing much more with managing some of the machines. So
good. Yeah, you've been doing great.
Thanks. Yeah. I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's been awesome. Good 2 years. You just hit your 2 year anniversary.
Yeah, it was 3 weeks ago, I think.
Okay. So Newsbomb released a trailer. Or it's coming out soon. We can't show you the graphic yet. It's still getting worked out and we'll reveal that shortly. But we can talk about the message a little bit. And at the end here, we'll reveal the actual message of the trailer. But as part of that, some of the theme of it is having hope. And especially when things are hard and difficult. So looking back at your life, you've been in a lot of different places. And I would love to hear a little bit about a time that you were able to find that hope. Or how do you find hope now? I would love to hear a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think for me, honestly, one of the first stories that really comes to mind was back when I lived in England. This was after I was now became a Christian. I reached this point where in 2014, I made the decision to obviously come to this discipleship school. However, I wasn't a citizen yet, so the law at the time dictated, like, if you're not a citizen, you can obviously travel outside of the country with your visa, but you're not allowed to be outside of the country for more than, I want to say it was 6 months. So anyways, this discipleship school that I went to was 9 months.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But I really just had a lot of faith and conviction around the fact that, you know, I'm really supposed to be doing this school. Like, I know this is the year that I'm supposed to be doing it in. So anyways, I took a huge leap of faith knowing, like, this is not just like a leap of faith. This is me giving up my potential of living in England ever again. Like being around my family, friends, all that, church family. So stepped into that and came back just fine. But the problem was like when your visa expires, you have to renew it. And that's when they would be able to tell like, oh, you've been out of the country for longer. So came back and then I think it was 2 years later my visa expired, so I had to renew. And that's when I think was one of the most trying seasons for me, because I knew like, okay, I'm actually part of a church family that I'm like really integrated to. I'm really connected here. I've obviously got a lot of friends here. I got all my family here. And so...
Like, yeah, your brother.
Brother, parents as
parents,
well.
Yeah.
And so I think that was a deeply distressing and stressful situation for me in the sense of, like, I'm about to get deported back to a country I don't want to go to. You know, like, they're going to basically say, like, okay, you overstepped, which obviously technically I did. You overstepped the law and you're not allowed to stay here, so you have to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think really just finding hope in that is just, it's not so much denying the reality of the situation, but it is actually submitting all those fears and all those thoughts and anxiety to the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly think that, you know, hope is one of those things that, especially nowadays, it feels like it's one of those things that can be so almost vague. It can be like this thing,
a general,
like,
light,
yeah,
at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, it's just kind of like, oh yeah, I kind of hope that's gonna happen, but I'm not really sure. And I actually just think hope is so much stronger than that, you know. I think it's something that really anchors our soul if we really have it. And in light of knowing I was coming onto this podcast and researching, filling up the topic of hope,
yeah,
I was looking at the original language in the Hebrew,
yeah,
even within the scripture, and it's this word that actually translates literally the word cord, like a rope. And a buddy of mine, I was listening to a teaching not long ago, and he was talking about hope as well, and he said that it's this principle, almost this idea of, like, if you have like a bunch of chopped wood and you're trying to carry it all by yourself, and like there's just so much wood that you're just dropping stuff everywhere.
Yeah.
And hope is this idea of, like, taking this cord and you're binding up all this wood so that you can carry it all. And it's this idea of, like, life is not always easy. Like, hope is always brought to the forefront in times of trouble and distress, you know. And when your life is falling apart and you're just dropping stuff, like, hope is the cord that comes and binds it all together and actually anchors it so that you can carry it all.
Yeah. I think the interesting thing you said was hope doesn't mean you won't have fear, but it's submitting those fears to God.
Yeah.
That's like, hey, I can't handle this. So it's not the fact that he makes you stronger to carry the wood, but he's giving you something so you can manage that wood, which is submitting those fears and those anxieties and letting him speak to you.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think for me, that's just really where even now my hope still comes from, you know. It's just, it's yeah, there's nowhere else where I can really get it. It's from the Lord, ultimately.
So did you find hope, like, during that time? And I how'd that end up? I mean, you're here today, but.
Yeah. I think where I just really found hope is actually more in processing that with leaders at the time, and of course more so the Lord. It just came down to this place of, like, okay, I actually stepped out in obedience to the Lord when I decided to leave the country and go do this discipleship school. And at the end of the day, I have to just trust in his sovereign grace. Like, if I get deported, I guess it's going to be what it's going to be. And I have to trust that he has got my best interest in heart, at heart, which he always does, right? And so it came around where I applied and I was like, I think this might get denied, but I'm still going to go for it. I'm still going to at least try. So I applied and they never said anything. Like, they just reissued my visa and that was it. So it was ended up not being an issue, which is great, even though it technically should have been an issue.
Yeah.
So.
Huh. Yeah. And they overlooked it. They overlooked that fact that
either that or they just missed it. I'm not sure.
Or missed it. Yeah. It's cool. God just, it's like, blind their eyes to that.
Exactly.
They're like looking, I don't see that. I don't see that. So cool. I'm glad that worked out. Situations don't always work out, but difficult times do make you look for hope.
Yeah.
It's exactly. You look somewhere. You have to have something to hold on to.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's a foundation. Yeah. Like you said, it's not just a general happy cat poster. You're like, you're doing great, cat motivational speaker. But it's a deep-rooted faith.
Yeah.
In something.
Yeah, exactly. So. And it's kind of like that verse that says, like, the three things that remain is faith, hope, and love, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hope is always the thing that anchors us. It's always there.
Hmm.
So.
Yeah, an important aspect that we should have. And hope requires anchoring in something, a message.
Mm.
I was curious for you, was there a message that spoke to you, and do you have a favorite Bible verse that has helped you get through difficult times?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think I wouldn't say I so much have a favorite Bible verse, but there are absolutely verses that I would go back to time and time again, especially for the sake of hope, you know. I recently found a lot of joy specifically in Isaiah 12. Talks about, like, there was a time where the Lord was angry with us, but he actually laid aside his anger in order to be with us, you know. And so I really love that. One that I actually do go to very often in terms of finding hope is Psalm 139. And it just talks about, you know, it doesn't really matter where we go. We can ascend to the heavens, or we can go to the deepest parts of the ocean. It doesn't really matter where we go. His presence is always with us, and his spirit always guides us, you know.
I love that one. When you sit down and when you rise, he knows. Like, when you go to bed, like, he knows where you are.
Yeah.
That's, very comforting to know that he's never leaving you.
Yeah.
He's never, you're never going to escape God.
Yeah.
he's always there to love you.
Yeah. And so true. And, you know, it's even obviously reflective of Jesus' time on the earth. He actually said to his disciples, you know, it's actually better that I go away because I'm going to send you another one of the same kind. Like, I'm going to send you a helper that's going to be with you all the time. And he even said to his disciples, like, don't fear, because I'm with you till the end of the age. So there's just so much comfort in that, knowing he's actually always with us, you know.
Yeah, it's awesome. A great reminder to have. I'll have to check out Isaiah 12. Never one that stuck out to me, but one question, and then we have our game to wrap up.
Yeah.
What does it mean to be purpose driven?
That is a great question. I think, you know, you can honestly find purpose in a lot of things.
Right.
I think there's purpose in work, there's purpose in career, purpose in getting married, having kids. All these things are great, you know. I think ultimately purpose, for me personally, all those things are great and we should pursue them and we should find purpose in them. But I think I always come back to the words of Jesus when he was asked, you know, what's the greatest commandment? He's like, actually, the greatest commandment is to love the Lord your God and to love your neighbor as yourself. Like, I think the minute, I recognize on this podcast, like, not everyone's going to have, like, faith, and that's okay. Like,
yeah.
I recognize that. But I think at the very least, like, actually serving others and actually loving others is one of the biggest purposes in life is to actually not live for ourselves and actually work our life in service of others is one of the biggest parts of actually finding purpose in life.
Yeah, it's more life-giving
to
help other people than absolutely. Just living for myself.
Yeah.
So you really flourish when you live for other people and live for God. And not everyone listening has a background of faith, but definitely encourage those to still listen and to engage about with your story too, because I think that is some important. So
absolutely.
Good. Well, thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, no, of course.
Ready for some hot takes?
Yeah,
hot
absolutely.
Takes, hot cakes. Okay, so to finish off, we'll play a game called Hot Takes. So I'll share a couple hot items, so this is either controversial statements. You can agree or disagree. Daniel, feel free to play along. First one, we got the cookie of the Oreo is better than the cream. Agree or disagree?
I actually agree with that.
You agree with that?
I agree. I think the cream's good. It's just not as good as the cookie.
Yeah.
I think.
You're not someone that combines all the creams and makes like a stuffed one.
I can never ever do that.
Daniel?
Now, with that being said, like, you also get, like, what, those Oreo thins with, like, barely any cream? I'm
right.
Like, that's just, like, a sin as well.
That's a crime. Not enough. So you do like a little bit of that.
Yeah.
But
absolutely.
You enjoy the cookie a little bit more.
I would say so.
So, you don't throw the icing in the trash, do you? The cream? You
absolutely scrape it not. Off.
Nope. My mom's done that before. I did cringe. I'm more of a mega stuff guy. Daniel?
Yeah. I think it's a team effort.
Team effort.
They compliment each other well.
Okay. Yeah. That is a very...
I like that.
Right in the middle answer.
Very politically correct.
Very politically correct. Oreo would agree with you. A hot dog is technically a taco.
Nah. Do you think it's technically a taco?
Yeah, you could make the case for that. I think you could.
I don't know. I mean...
I may get crucified for saying that. So.
Don't ever go to Mexico.
Yeah, Portillo's, pretty close to Taco Bell.
I don't know. I think not that I eat either, really, but I think Taco Bell might be that a little bit better.
Okay, yeah. It's a hard one to advocate for.
Yeah.
Okay, rugby is better than football.
That's a hard one for me because, like, I actually probably enjoy watching football more, but there's mm-hmm. this part of me where I actually never grew up watching it.
Yeah.
And grew up, obviously, around rugby more, so mm-hmm. there's this sentimental part of me that's like, oh, I think rugby's better.
Yeah. I threw that one in there because I thought that it'd be interesting to hear your thoughts.
Yeah.
If, what would make rugby better?
Honestly, there are, in a lot of ways, really similar games.
Yeah.
Rules are obviously really different. Mm-hmm. Same end goal is to drive the ball across the end goal, but
a lot more running, I feel like.
Yeah. I actually just think they're both pretty much on equal playing ground. Actually don't think there's one that's better than the other. They're just different.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, it depends who you ask. Chris Smith, operations, big footballer. He would probably say hard and fast, football's best. This is a place in South Africa. I don't know if you've been there, but hot take, Table Mountain is better than the Grand Canyon.
I actually disagree.
You disagree? You've been to the Grand Canyon?
I've been to both.
Okay.
And Table Mountain's cool. It is really cool.
Nice.
But once you're at the Grand Canyon, it's like a whole other level. It's pretty spectacular.
Yeah.
So.
Cool. Would you recommend going to Table Mountain?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. I think if I was to recommend going to South Africa, I would say absolutely have to go to Cape Town. You have to go to Table Mountain.
Yeah.
And then Kruger National Park is another one.
Okay.
It's like you're in between the wild animals. It's pretty awesome.
Sweet. So. I hear the nature is unreal.
Yeah.
In South Africa.
It's pretty cool. Like, especially like I said, in Kruger National Park, you're driving in between the animals and you'll be driving along and all of a sudden you're like, oh, there's a cheetah. And it's like a tree that's like not even 10 feet from you and there's like a cheetah in the tree type of thing.
Yeah.
So it's pretty neat.
That is really neat.
Yeah.
Okay, last one is serious.
Yeah.
There is no hope in troubled times.
There is absolutely always hope in troubled times.
So. Amen.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good way to end it. And that's the big trailer reveal. The message is there is hope in troubled times. And we're excited to start releasing that trailer out, and you'll start to see it out and about, and we'll share that design later. But this is a pretty exciting one. I don't know if you had any thoughts about the new trailer, but
yeah, I loved it. I think it's really, really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love the message on it. So
yeah, it's pretty cool stuff. All right, anything else you'd like to share about anything to share to your kids, your wife, anything you want to say?
No, I think I'm good. I just thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah.
It's been an absolute pleasure to be here and be able to just converse and especially talk about hope. I think it's a huge, huge topic and it's a huge deal. So
yeah, it was a joy.
Yeah.
Enjoy doing this with you. Comment below if you think Mornay should start his own podcast. I think he should. I think he's pretty good at this. So again, thank you for being on here. And I really enjoyed this. Until next time, stay purpose-driven and own it every moment.
Hi, everyone. This is CJ from Recruiting at Nussbaum, and I'd love to answer any questions you have about driving with us. Give us a call at 309-268-1199 or visit nussbaumjobs.com. Talk to you soon. You've been listening to Terminal Exchange, the official podcast of Nussbaum Transportation. If you're enjoying our content, please leave us a review. Your reviews help us spread the word about these important topics and invite more people into the conversation. You can rate and review us on your podcast app or visit us online at terminalexchange.org. New episodes arrive every other Tuesday, so be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow Nussbaum on your favorite social media platforms and be the first to know when new episodes are released. Thanks for listening. Until next time, own every moment and stay purpose-driven.